risico.
I take this opportunity to welcome all of you in this joint meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Transport and the Portfolio Committee on Energy. The purpose of this meeting is to look at the situation of fuel in South Africa. It came as a result of a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Transport, where ASTRA made the Portfolio Committee aware of the fact that once there had been a fuel shortage, a jet fuel shortage resulting in the cancellation of flights in South Africa at a particular date. But they were also not looking just at that. That was an indication of the deeper problem. And during the presentation, ASTRA made an appeal to the Portfolio Committee on Transport to intervene on behalf of ASTRA so that we can then begin to look at the root causes of the problem, the situation as it is today, and what challenges we could face in future if the root causes of the problem were not dealt with. The Portfolio Committee on Transport committed to intervene. It then wrote a letter to the Portfolio Committee Chairperson of the Energy requesting that we have a joint meeting because the problems of energy supply don't only reside with ASTRA. There are a number of other entities that are involved in the supply chain. We would like to take this opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee on Energy for responding quickly to our call. And we are in this meeting today to look at two issues. The first issue relates to the indicator of a deeper problem, the fuel shortage as we speak, if there is still that and challenges around that. But in a broader sense, we would also look at the root causes to that. Why would we have such a situation so that we can then begin to address both issues. The immediate issue of the fuel shortage and the long-term issue of the transformation of the energy sector, which will lead us to a situation where we would not then be facing the problem of having a fuel shortage. So we are dealing with two issues. We are dealing with the immediate issue of the shortage and then the long-term issue of the transformation. In looking at the transformation, we are going to be looking at what are the real challenges, what is the situation that we inherited in the country, and where are we in terms of that, and what strategies are we putting in place. Are our strategies effective enough for us to realize what we intended to realize? And if not, what changes we require today? That is the long-term part. On the short-term part, we are going to be looking at what are the immediate challenges and what strategies can we put in place so as to ensure that there is no shortage as we move forward, particularly in preparation for future. And those are the key issues. The meeting will be co-chaired by Transport and Energy. And in terms of our draft agenda, we have had a repeat of one item. Item number 3 also appears as item number 7 on the agenda. And we would request that we delete item number 7 because it is a mistake. As soon as we are done with item number 2, the members of the Portfolio Committee on Energy would move out, and members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport will remain behind to complete to deal with item number 7, who is reflected as number 3, the consideration and adoption of the Portfolio Committee on Transport 10 program and strategy plan. That item will be dealt with in the absence of the Portfolio Committee on Energy. Now that we have dealt with the purpose of the meeting, the agenda, and the process, we will move to item number 2 and deal with apologies. And I will take the first take on that. From the Portfolio Committee on Transport, we have 5 apologies. First one is from Honorable Kuno, who has hurt herself on the tent and is going to the doctor. Honorable Bufesta is on the Parliament business. On a sudden health-related mission. Honorable Hoho, an appointment with the doctor today. Honorable Manuleja was here and received a phone call that one of his friends was involved in an accident and car accident, and he has to assist in determining the best situation here. And then Honorable Babata was also involved in an accident, but he survived. The situation related to Tumar Nuleva is such as a different thing of the virus. So he's dealing with that. He's dealing with the journey of the Tahiti. He's trying to conclude that he should be time for him to join. And then he said that I would ask the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Energy to talk about the apologies from here.
From the Energy Portfolio Committee, there are 2 apologies only. And Mr. Hadden, I think it's a different way. And from Mr. Lankrayan, I think he's a CC on economic development. So those are 2 apologies. We hope that the other one will be in the same way. And if I can just continue, from the Energy Service, it was 4 reports from the four reports will be taken, not in the city. So if members can tell me, they will report their 4. I will take them 2 and not 4 in one. And also the announcement that 3 members, 2 members of the committee, including the parliamentarians and government, myself to the committee and the honorable myself.
Thank thank you. We have received another apology from Honorable Hangana. Requesting that she be excused in this meeting. The reasons are not given in the apology. Thank you very much. Can we then move to item number 3, which is the briefing by the Department of Energy on jet fuel supply. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. My name is Mediso Mokubane. I'm the SPC for the Department of Energy. And my colleague that are here, the Mediso Mokubane, who is the DDG responsible for hydrocarbons and energy planning, and Mr. Ramwezi, who is the chief director for energy planning and also a project manager on the liquid fuel task team. And also Mr. Bombango Nandavola, who is also assisting us as a secretary. And I will then ask Mr. Ramwezi to please take up some of the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Basically, I'll just go straight into the presentation, where the briefing is basically to give you an update of our views in terms of what the reasons were that led to the shortages of jet fuel at all Tambo International Airport, and basically what the department has done to work towards addressing those issues, as well as the progress that we've made to date. As you're all aware, early in August, there were below average stock levels reported at all Tambo International Airport. On the worst days, the stock levels fell to levels of 2.1 days, whereas the normal average stock holdings, which is an international norm and which except Babasis, is at around 5.5 days. Now, the reasons that we believe the stock levels fell to such low levels is a combination of issues. Some of the issues were relating to the rail, which delivers supply from the coastal refineries to the airport. There were some disruptions with regards to supply in that regard. And there were also some issues with regard to the inland refinery, which also supplies all our Tambo. And a combination of those two basically led to low stock levels, which was sustained for a period of about 3 to 4 weeks. So although supply resumed to normal levels, recovery of normal levels was very slow. And then in response to this issue, the Minister of Energy held a meeting, and then out of that, with the various role players, and out of that meeting, she established a task team to not only investigate the reasons as to why there was a shortage at OR Tambo, but also to put in plans to mitigate against possible disruptions going forward, and more especially during the period of the World Cup. The mandate of the task team was first of all to investigate the jet fuel shortages that occurred at OR Tambo in August, and also to ensure that appropriate measures are in place to avoid a similar occurrence in future, and more especially during the World Cup. It was also expanded to develop a consolidated supply and logistic plan for all motor fuels, so not just jet fuels. So the plan should also look into availability and supply of petrol and diesel as well during that period. The role players of the task team, basically there's a core team which was established, which meets on a monthly basis and reports back to the minister on a monthly basis. And it's convened by the Department of Energy and is also coordinated by the department. The members, the role players there are all SAPIA member companies, which are all the major oil companies, the six oil companies. It's also the three Transnet divisions, Transnet Pipelines, Transnet Freight Rail, and also Transnet Ports Authority. and is also the airports company of South Africa. Other stakeholders who are key to ensuring the security of supply during the period, which are not necessarily members of the core task team, but we have agreed that we need to make sure that we engage with them on a continuous basis to make sure that we cover all bases, are the non-EXA airports, which we've subsequently decided that it actually makes sense to include them in the task team. The board of airline representatives of South Africa, because the airlines depends on the actual fuel availability at the airport for them to be able to do that takeoff, as well as the Airlines Association of South Africa. The board of airlines representative of South Africa represents the international flights, while the Airlines Association of South Africa deals mostly with your domestic flights. And there's also the Petroleum Retailers Alignment Forum, which deals with our retailers for petrol and diesel, and also the Department of Transport, because they as well are also in the process of developing various plans which indicate what are the projected passenger movements going to be for all modes of transport during the period. And we need to engage with them to understand what impact those projections have on the demand for various liquid fuels. And there's also the Department of Trade and Industry, and more specifically as the Competition Commission, because as you can see from the role players, we require all members of SAPIA to be part of that team, and they are basically in horizontal relationships, and we need to make sure that when we formulate a plan, it's formulated in a coordinated manner with all stakeholders involved. In terms of the scope of the task team, it includes all motor fuels, so jet, petrol, and diesel. It's all the airports which have been identified as primary airports for the World Cup 2010. Most of those airports, I think about 7, are EXA airports. However, there are non-EXA airports, 3 of them, that are also need to be included in planning. And it's also all the airports that have been deemed as secondary airports for the World Cup. Now, the difference between primary and secondary airports is that primary airports are those that have been identified as servicing the primary, being the hub, servicing the whole city during the World Cup, whereas the secondary airports will basically be used to alleviate if there's congestion on the primary airports. Now, we also had discussions about including the military airports as part of this, in case some of them were going to be used for alleviation of congestion or highly constrained airports. However, the report that we have to date is that none of the military airports would be used for additional refueling for passenger movements. So to what extent we include those, we're basically in the process of assessing that. And it will also be ensuring that all host cities are included in scope. What is out of scope in this plan will be all the other liquid fuel products. For example, your liquefied petroleum gas and your illuminating paraffin, that will not be included as part of the scope. And then the plan will not necessarily include planning for our neighboring countries, namely Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland. And this is not to say that we are not concerned about ensuring that they are supplied during the World Cup. We're just saying that in terms of the focus of the task team, we are not necessarily going to go into detailed planning in terms of how those companies and countries are supplied. However, those countries do actually have agreements with various companies within South Africa which export to them, and the underlying principle is that all agreements should be honored, and none of these countries should be negatively impacted due to the World Cup. So that has to be kept in mind as part of the planning process. And the volumes that are going to be exported need to be honored. So the objectives of the task team are to establish the root cause for the reduction of jet fuel at Oa Tambo. It's also to develop a consolidated FIFA World Cup South Africa fuel and logistics plan for all petroleum products for the industry. It's to identify and put in place measures to alleviate key constraints and risks throughout the liquid value chain, and to also, very importantly, develop a consolidated emergency response understand, including a clear communication plan. Because what has also started emerging through our engagements with the various stakeholders is that it's actually the things, the unplanned eventualities that unfold, which actually can leave you in a state of being negatively exposed. So for us, having an emergency response plan with the clear responsibilities and roles of all role players is a key objective of the task team. So another thing is to then ensure that the all participants are clear on what their responsibilities are, so that we can ensure a coordinated and transparent communication mechanism. And it's also to make sure that we provide input into broader World Cup issues in South Africa. For example, the team which is led, the IMC, which is also chaired by the Deputy President of the Republic. So reporting to those types of structures through our minister where possible. And another thing is to also identify agreements or practices that will require exemption in terms of the relevant section in the Competition Act. Because as I mentioned, the role players in there include the all industry who are in horizontal relationships. So although by the nature of the task team, we are not promoting any practices that would convene the act, we just need to make sure that we are always conscious of that. And at the moment, the industry is in the process of also applying for an exemption to allow them to be able to engage on matters of national emergency or priority. So some of the progress that we've made to date is that the department has held bilaterals with individual role players, more specifically each of the oil companies, and also with the Transnet groups as the key role players. And really what that process was intended at doing was to start articulating some of the key issues which led up to the shortages at OR Tambo, because it helps to get the different viewpoints from engaging with the individual companies concerned to get different perspectives. And also to start understanding what each player identifies as the areas of high risk and what the causes for those risks are. And also to understand the key operations of the liquid fuel supply and logistics chain, and identify areas which could cause disruptions to the supply of fuel during the World Cup. And also some of the players had started on the process of doing their own projections and putting in place their own plans. And the role of the department is to essentially provide a national perspective of that. So where these were already in the process of being drafted or where they were available, the plans and the projections were shared by the industry, or at least the plans that they were planning to put in place, they were also shared with industry. And also as part of that was to start also discussing the possible actions that could be taken to alleviate disruptions going forward. After the bilaterals, an inception meeting was also held, which was informed by the key issues which emanated from the bilaterals. So the role of various players and possible mechanisms of addressing some of the key issues were discussed, and some of the key actions which needed to be taken were also discussed, and also the terms of reference which defines the role and responsibilities and the key deliverables of the task team were also discussed, and input was obtained, and the terms of reference were subsequently also enhanced or refined based on that. And then also understanding that there is different levels of training required at each level, where the department is more responsible for consolidation and doing a national plan, the individual companies are still responsible for doing their own individual operational planning to ensure that they do meet the supply plans and will ensure that they actually meet the demand. And we've also been participating in various forums which inform our planning process. For example, the aviation subsector task team, which is chaired by the DOT, which basically is focusing on all aspects of planning relating to aviation, with the availability and planning for jets for fuel just being one aspect. So understanding that in terms of other capacity constraints at the airport, how do those actually impact on the ability of that airport to supply the demand which is projected. And there's also the airline working group where all the airlines are presented. And then this is essentially to then understand in terms of what the plans that the various airlines have and the projections that they've made in terms of fuel demand during the World Cup, how will this impact on the normal demand for jet fuel? And then just then moving in terms of some of the issues which we believe led to the shortages or could have contributed to the shortages in August, and some of the key risk areas that we would like to focus on for the World Cup. I thought we could have there just to show you the current supply to all Tambo at the moment. There's a dedicated pipeline which comes from the inland refinery, which supplies approximately 70% of the volume to our terminal. Then some of the volume is actually supplied through the rail network from the coastal refinery. And then, so this is basically then the on a weekly basis, these are the figures. So from the dedicated pipeline from the rail, it's approximately 33 million liters per week. And then which rolls up to about 133 liters per month. And then we also got our coastal pipeline from Durban to Johannesburg, which supplies approximately between 5 million liters and 10 million liters. At the moment, we're providing this on a monthly basis or also as a backup to the other two modes of transport that's been required. So on average, this rolls up to about 140 million liters, which is supplied to our terminals. These figures are obviously approximate figures because they do fluctuate, but they're just indicative figures. And then the average weekly demand at the moment is 32, averaging at about 32 million liters, looking at a period for about the last 2 months. So essentially what this picture shows is that in terms of supply, there is a very close link between the supply from the dedicated pipeline and rail to the actual demand. And then when you look at the peak demand during the World Cup, that is almost two-thirds more at about 52 million liters on the peak week. So that's basically saying that on the week where there's going to be most demand at the airport or for jet fuel at the airport during the World Cup is estimated to be at about 52 million liters. And then the dedicated pipeline, as I indicated, supplies approximately 70% of the volume to our terminal. It has an operating capacity of about 22 million. However, the maximum possible is 25 million. But for operational reasons, it does not necessarily operate at that. And then bulk of the volume supplied to our terminal is based on committed customer orders. So the inland refinery basically produces supplies product which is not necessarily their own sales but on behalf of other oil companies as well. And the constraint there is really that from the inland refinery, although it's already supplying a bulk of the volume, you cannot supply any volume over and above what the pipeline capacity allows. And also because of some of the volume we supply from customer orders, it's difficult to then limit, if there's too much supply at our time, or to limit how much it can be supplied from the inland refinery because they basically have old customer orders that they need to honor and have committed to. Now, in terms of the rail capacity, this is the one area that we believe that if we're saying that throughput to our terminal can be increased upon, this is the area that we identified capacity can be increased. At the moment, the Transnet Freight Rail has 204 rail tank cars which are in operation, and then they basically have what they call block trains, which is essentially has 32 rail tank cars at the moment. and then they do, when they offload this at all, Tamu, they do this in two, basically they offload twice a day, and then they offload currently six days a week, and the average volume that can be operationally supplied, given that assumption, is approximately 11 million liters. Now, what they have planned for the World Cup is that they're planning to upgrade the number of rail tankers to approximately 280. They're also looking at increasing the size of the block train to approximately 38 or 40 rail tankers. However, if they do increase the number of block trains to 38 or 40, they need to have an additional shift for offloading the rail tankers, because at the moment, in one shift, they can only offload about 16 rail tankers. And they're also looking at increasing the operating days from an average of 6 days to about 7 days. And then looking at this planned picture, the maximum volume of jet fuel that can be supplied to the airport increases to approximately 16 million liters. So you can see that there is a significant difference in terms of what they're currently supplying and what they could supply if this is applied. It's almost a difference of 5 million liters a week. However, in order for them to introduce the additional shift, there are also other stakeholders at the airport which need to be consulted upon, engaged upon, and also committed upon, because if a shift is required, it's not only Transnet who's involved in that process, there's also workers from the airport operators, for example, who need to also be available to work that additional shift. And the same with increasing working and offloading or deliveries from 6 days to 7 days. If we're saying that people are working 7 days a week, it means that weekend work also needs to be introduced. And again, it's not only Transnet that are involved in that process, but also the airport operators as well. The coastal pipeline, the Durban to Joburg pipeline, or the DJP, which supplies also from the coastal refinery to Oil Tambo. Basically, this pipeline is not only dedicated to jet fuel, but also supplies petrol and diesel. It is able to deliver significant volumes at a time. At the moment, it's about between 5 million liters and 10 million liters. However, there are some, setbacks or implications in terms of them using the coastal pipeline for supplying of jet fuel. In that, because the pipeline is operating at maximum capacity, Transnet pipelines have basically introduced mechanisms of improving the throughput of fuel through the pipeline. They've implemented what they call a drag reducing agent, where there's a chemical which is introduced into the petrol or the diesel, which allows it to move faster through the pipeline. However, the minute when jet is then also put into that pipeline, you cannot apply that drag reducing agent, which means that not only are you displacing the petrol and jet that you would have transported through the pipeline, but you're also reducing the throughput time of moving that petrol or diesel from the coast to inland markets. So that's basically a trade-off with regards to using the coastal pipeline, that although it allows significant volumes to be transported at a time, there is a setback or a trade-off which needs to be considered. And also another thing with regards to the Durban to Joburg pipeline is that the lead time to get the product from the coast to the airport is also longer. And the reason for that is also because it moves other products as well. Once the product arrives at Oil Tambo, there is a chance of contamination, so it has to be recertified. And there's also a process which they call settlement, where the product actually has to settle before it is actually usable. So it does not necessarily get used by the aircraft immediately on the day of arrival. There is a period where it has to be recertified and settled. So even though your stock levels at that particular point might be high, it's not necessarily usable. And also another thing to avoid contamination the storage tanks where that where the jet fuel coming from the coastal refinery arrives. It needs to be ensured that the aft storage tanks which are available and are empty and do not have any other product in them. So it means that a few days before it arrives, there will be certain storage tanks which are actually empty, but you cannot fill them because if you fill them, you actually run a higher risk when the product arrives. So the risk to this is that in case of high demand, this may potentially lead to below average stock levels. But this is something which has to be monitored and has to be efficiently managed. So just in summary, then some of the constraints then at all tumble. We're saying that given all those constraints, there's currently limited storage capacity at all tumble, although XR are in the process of constructing two storage tanks which will be ready by our understanding at around latest March and next year, so it will be on time for the World Cup. And also, as I've mentioned, that although there are certain storage tanks, when there's jet fuel coming from the coastal pipeline, even if there's more volume pushed through the rail network, this cannot actually be offloaded because the storage tanks have to be made available for jet fuel. The dedicated inland pipeline is running at maximum operational capacity, so it's difficult to actually increase throughput through that. And the long lead times on the Durban to Joburg pipeline and the negative impact of jet fuel on other products is something that needs to be considered, because insufficient time is required for recertification and contamination. And then the coastal pipeline should then obviously be used to meet additional demand which cannot be met through the inland pipeline and rail, and it should also be used for emergency purposes. And then what has also emerged from our perspective is that once stock levels drop to a certain level, it is also then very difficult to recover because of the limited throughput infrastructure, and this is where the coastal pipeline comes in. And then just to illustrate that in terms of a diagram, basically when we look at the period from beginning of July up until last week, 11th of October, as you can see, between July and the 10th of August, the stock levels were sitting below 15 million liters, which was way below the average. However, once it is a low level, it sort of sustained itself at that low level. And you can see around the 11th of August, there was a huge jump in supply, and then it stabilized again afterwards. Now, if I then go to the next diagram here, you can see that during that same period, week 33 and 34 actually correspond with that jump in the previous diagram. This is where then the product was pushed through the coastal Durban to Joburg pipeline. But then once that had come through, the normal stock levels were resumed, and then the normal operation from the inland refinery and rail also resumed after that. So in terms of those issues that we've highlighted, then we just have some recommendations which have started emanating from our engagements with the various stakeholders. And then in terms of storage, consideration should be given to additional or even temporary storage tanks at all Tambo during the World Cup. EXA is in the process of constructing two new storage tanks. But then, as I indicated in the previous diagram, the peak week demand is going to be at 52 million liters. Now, consideration needs to be given whether to be able to cater for that additional demand during that period, over and above the two-year storage tanks, should we consider having temporary storage tanks, and if so, to what extent. However, Transnet Freightrail has also indicated that some of their rail tank cars can be used as storage facilities during the World Cup. the exact quantity still need to be determined depending on how on what and how much contingency stock do we actually want to hold during that period. And the scheduling between the Durban to Joburg pipeline and Drake, basically transit pipelines and transit freight rail, is very critical to ensure that optimal volumes are supplied by each mode of transport. What we mean there is that if you look at this picture here, the stock levels were low, but at some point the coastal pipeline was required to provide volume. Now we're saying that the inland pipeline cannot supply any additional volume over and above what it actually can provide. Rail can provide less and it can provide more. However, because of the challenges that are faced with regards to when fuel is coming from the pipeline, close coordination is then required from the coastal volumes that are coming through. So rail and pipeline need to make sure that there's close coordination between the two to ensure that the sequencing and the scheduling is optimal so that volumes arrive when they're expected and in the quantities expected as well. And also what would be critical is having a forecasting of deliveries approximately 4 to 6 weeks we think is adequate, and this will enable all suppliers to plan better when they see their projections and if actual volumes that have been delivered are deviating from the plan. Being able to do the forecast and comparing the difference will assist in planning better and ensuring that any disruptions are alleviated. In terms of logistics, we're saying that the dedicated pipeline should continue supplying up to their maximum capacity. The balance of the demand needs to be made from or split between rail and the DJP. And then the rail will need to determine the offsets by the DJP and schedule or calculate the number of rail train cars that they need to deliver per block train accordingly to ensure that total volumes at Oral Tambo are as planned. And there's also coordination with the suppliers to ensure that adequate volumes are supplied per mode of transport, because the suppliers also need to know, are we then moving that product through rail or are we moving it through the pipeline? So that coordination is required at that level as well. For the coastal pipeline, at present, it's proposed that weekly deliveries of approximately 10 million liters be provided from the coastal pipeline, and it also be used as backup for other modes of transport if something should go wrong over and above the weekly deliveries. But what's also very key is that a clear communication plan and coordination is required when the delivery is scheduled on the DJP, and also in cases where the DJP needs to supply unplanned volumes which are not originally in the plan. But if before the period of the World Cup, we're also proposing that the monthly delivery of approximately 5 million liters still be supplied from the pipeline, so that the can build momentum instead of establishing the clear communication mechanism and sorting out the operations to ensure that by the time we get to the World Cup, there are efficiencies and improvements in the project. Rail is the only mode of transport or reasonable mode of transport where throughput for jet fuel can be increased without negatively impacting on other products. It is critical that all the RTCs, the 280 rail train cars that Transnet Freight Rail plans to bring into operation, are brought into operation as planned. The additional shunt to allow 40 rail train cars to be offloaded a week should also be introduced, and the deliveries should take 70 days a week. However, as we indicated, in order for this to reach fruition, engagement and committed is also required from other role players who are impacted upon, first of all, by introducing the additional shifts, and also by introducing the additional work day on weekends. In terms of planning and coordination, the role of the airport operators is very critical for consolidation and coordination of operations at the airport. But the airport operators were not referring to EXA, but to the companies which are responsible for dealing with the logistics and volumes and operations of jet fuel at all the airports. Forecast should be done, and then also there should be daily monitoring, and deviations from plans should be clearly monitored and communicated so that corrective action can be taken during the event. There's an urgent need for a risk or contingency plan to be put in place. There is currently, at all TAMO, there is currently an existing crisis management plan. However, this needs to be expanded upon to ensure that all key role players are part of the plan and have input into the plan where there may be gaps. And a clear lines of communication and a communication protocol needs to be put in place where different scenarios of eventualities are highlighted, and also contingency measures thereof. A centralized and consolidated information needs to be available where all role players have access to monitor daily demands. And the planning, and then lastly, planning should include all primary airports and not just all Tambo. And it should also include petrol and diesel and not just focus on jet fuel. Otherwise, it might be part of it. And some of the key role players, as I mentioned, is the Department of Energy, which has the centralized role of coordination and oversight at a high level and non-operational. EXA assisting us with the projections for demand during the World Cup, which has also been translated into the demand for fuel. And also then can be used, that information can be used then for maintenance and monitoring of actual versus planned demand and stock levels. The airport operator consolidates the individual plans and volumes that are coming from the different suppliers, and they actually monitor the day-to-day operations at the various airports. And the role in terms of notifying the relevant role players when actual volumes deviate from planned volumes needs to be emphasized. And then there's a need for effective and efficient management of stock levels and delivery. The suppliers need to ensure that they supply the individual plans to the airport operators timely so that the operators can actually understand what the consolidated picture looks like. And then the plan volumes, they need to then make sure that they actually meet and honor that plan volume. President Fred Rail is then responsible for coordinating and ensuring that the rail delivers on what they plan to, and likewise transit pipelines to ensure that the pipeline and delivers on what they committed to. And the Transit Ports Authority also becomes critical in terms of the import of fuel. Because most during the World Cup, most supply will be through imports because there is limited refining capacity. So there will be increased imports, which, if not well coordinated, could also negatively impact on supply down the value, down the supply chain. Thank you.
Can we then have a presentation by Rob?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and honorable members of both committees. The purpose of this presentation is really to highlight some of the risks that we have identified for 2010 and how we hope or how we believe we need to mitigate against those risks. My humble apologies, I did not introduce myself. My name is Bongani Masego. I'm the director responsible for operations at AXA. And I have with me colleagues that I've brought for, firstly, if she can just by way of showing her hand, Nomini Rabu. She is head of corporate governance and legal at AXA. My other colleague next to her is Andre Fumulen, responsible for operations. And then next to him is Ndipiwe Nduli, responsible for stakeholder management. What you see there in front of you is just a chart that really details what the storage capacity is at each of our airports. And just by way of example, if I can start with Howard Tambo International Airport, we have currently a storage capacity of 47.1 million liters. Our daily consumption, this is excluding the World Cup, is about 4.5 million liters. And we have storage supply of about 6 days. And so I will not go through each and every one of our airports, but suffice to note that we are constructing 2 new tanks at OR Tambo, which should give us additional capacity of 6 million liters. And then we are also going to be constructing, if you look under Durban International, La Mercy, we will be constructing at the new airport at La Mercy, we will have the storage capacity of about 6 million liters, and we currently use about 300,000 liters per day. The point was made earlier in the earlier presentation about how we receive jet fuel into OR Tambo. And we currently have three sources through which we receive jet fuel. We have the rail tank cars from the coast that are supplied by Transnet. We have the multi-product pipeline with the Durban-Johannesburg line, which is a multi-product line. And we also have a dedicated pipeline that goes directly into the fuel farm at OR Tambo, supplying us with about 22 million liters per week. That's just an indication of the fuel farm, and it means we have one for each of our airports, but we currently have nine tanks at OR Tambo. We're currently constructing an additional two, and we have identified a site for a possible future tank, but that's not prior to the World Cup. The graph that you see in the blue at the bottom, the small blue lines at the bottom, are what our current consumption is. We've plotted out over the World Cup period from the round about the 11th or the early part of June until July over the World Cup, what our typical consumption has been. And the purple bars are what we believe the demand is going to be for the World Cup. So you can see in some instances we're going to be needing a lot more fuel, and this is just OR Tambo, a lot more fuel than we are currently using today. And I guess this is really the pertinent slide that I, owing from the last presentation that we made when we had the reduction in fuel stock levels at OR Tambo. I think one of the key challenges that we have identified for the World Cup in particular is the guarantee of supply of jet fuel on a continuous basis. We believe that with the infrastructure that we have, with the storage capacity that we have at OR Tambo, we will have sufficient capacity to store the fuel. However, that which we use on a daily basis must be replenished. And hence, if I can take you back to those, to that slide wherein I mentioned the three different modes through which we receive jet fuel. That is absolutely imperative for us. We cannot have an interruption in that supply, which led to some of the problems that we had in August. Now, having said that, and you'll see later on in the slide, this is not necessarily true for all of our airports. We have identified airports within the access table, namely Bloemfontein and Port Elizabeth, wherein we believe we have deficient storage capacity based on the World Cup traffic that we are expecting. Again, if I can just emphasize that we are saying that for the World Cup, the supply chain cannot fail. All three modes through which we receive jet fuel for the World Cup must be guaranteed over the period at all of our airports, and not just at our terminals. That's just to give the members an indication of the designated airports for 2010, and really the purpose of this slide is to show that there are some 2010 airports that fall out of the access table. Lanseria Airport is a privately owned airport with about 900,000 liters storage capacity. Kuala Lumpur is a privately owned airport, and Gateway International is owned by the province of Limpopo. If I can then just take you through the example that I made of Port Elizabeth Airport, this is just really a representation of the traffic that we anticipate over the World Cup period. We've mapped out the days in which we expect for there to be a lot of traffic in and out, and the tall bar graph that you see in the middle, there are the days in which Port Elizabeth is going to be hosting games, and the lines that you see going across the yellow, orange, and red lines are really an indication of how long we need to be keeping the airport in operation at peak to be able to process those volumes. So quite clearly, on some of the days, for an example, on the 13th of June, on the 17th of June, as by way of example, the 25th or 24th of June, we are going to have to operate PE on a 24-hour basis. So we are going to be moving people in and out of that airport, and that airport will remain operational for 24 hours. So I don't need to then reiterate the emphasis that puts on the storage of fuel. This is just an indication of the air traffic movement. What you see there as ATMs is the actual landings, which will then indicate the amount of fuel uptake that we expect to be taken through Port Elizabeth Airport. What we have been able to do for each airport, and not just Port Elizabeth, is map out what the storage capacity is, map out what we believe the consumption is going to be on a daily basis, and what stock then we're going to have to replenish. And as you can see from that Excel spreadsheet, from about the 14th of June, without any interventions, we start to run into problems at Port Elizabeth Airport. Now, there are some measures that we believe we can mitigate against those negative numbers that you see. But again, it really relates to the supply. There is a dedicated pipeline that runs from the harbor in PE directly into the airport, and we believe that line needs to be constantly fed through with fuel to ensure that over that one-month period for the World Cup, we don't run into any hiccups in Port Elizabeth. At Bloemfontein, we are in discussions with providing for storage capacity within the city of Mangaung, and we believe that because Bloemfontein is pretty central, there is not going to be a need for an aircraft departing out of Oliver Tambo. They can take sufficient fuel to land in Port Elizabeth and land in Bloemfontein and take off without having to refuel in Bloemfontein. So those are some of the measures that we believe are possible. And that's just a graphic illustration of when we start to run in. You can see there from the purple bars, they start to run into the negatives pretty early into the World Cup. And this is just, I must stress, this is without any intervention. And obviously, it then stresses the need for there to be there's some very solid interventions that ensure a constant supply. By way of then conclusion, again, the supply of jet fuel needs to be guaranteed, and we believe is the single biggest risk for airport operations. As an industry, we need to find, as an aviation industry, we need to find solution which entails close cooperation. I think that came up quite strongly in the previous slide. And the sharing of information, especially amongst all role players, is going to be critical, such that if we are anticipating problems, we are aware of those problems earlier on, and we are able to kick in our contingency plan. Again, by way of closing, the supply logistics planning and execution during the World Cup will be extremely vital. All of the role players that are involved that were identified earlier will have to work very, very closely together to ensure that the supply is uninterrupted and the stock is usable at the airport when it arrives. That is pretty much the end of my presentation, and if I could just then close by emphasizing at this point, we see a major risk around the supply of jet fuel, or the guaranteed supply of jet fuel at all of our airports, and that is really what we believe is a concern. Having said that, a task team has been formed, and there is work that is being done to ensure that we can get over the problems that we had in August and that they don't repeat themselves. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think in terms of the agenda, we have the deliberations from members with the two presentations. I think we can hear whether you've got issues to raise, or if it's okay, we can just say agree, then we go. It's not the case. I can see that from some members. We've got Honorable Farrell, Mustau, and Smith, Lucas, and Matilda in that order.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you to the presenters. I'm assuming that there was some sort of liaison between the two parties here, because although there's some minor figures that don't tally, I'm not going to question. But one thing comes to mind, Madam Chair, during this presentation, when we're looking specifically at ORT, is that, you know, clearly it's not only there, the problem beyond that. I think it's important that we try to get a picture of the broad picture of where there is going to be a supply problem as in PE and all the major areas. I just want to ask something. First of all, of the first presenter, she mentioned that the recovery was very slow, but she didn't actually say what the recovery period was. But I mean, judging from the size, you know, I'm assuming it's a couple of months or something, but we need to know what that recovery period was in terms of that particular situation to get it back to normal, and what the reasons were about that, that delay. The second thing that I'd like to ask about, which I don't see reflected in any of these reports, and that is the very serious issue of leakage and shrinkage and evaporation and all those other things that go with fuel storage. And we are aware and conscious, certainly this committee from transport is, of a major spillage of fuel that went underground in ORT, which lost millions of litres, millions, and the impact that had environmentally. And I want to know whether there is some assurance coming from that to deal with that problem. And linked to that is the whole issue of road transport of fuel. During the presentation, my chairperson will recall, at Le Mercy, which was covered very extensively by ACTA, we spoke about the seriousness of getting fuel to that particular airport. And 25 tankers a day have to go in there just to keep up with the normal current requirements that is currently taking place, not the World Cup requirements, current requirements. Now, I don't know where 25 tankers are going to get, first of all, access to that particular airport on the basis of its current transport networks or access roads, and what it's going to do to those roads. And I would like to hear whether there's any serious initiatives that are going to be taking place in terms of trying to sort that problem out. Now, the other question, Manatek, are you happy to take three or four from each member, or how are you going to restrict us? Because otherwise, I don't know what time we've got. I've got a string of them, but I don't want to take up everybody's time. I'm quite happy. Can I do that? Okay, all right. Thank you very much. The last one then relates to the whole aspect of the rail transport side of things. Now, we also in this committee are consciously aware of what procurement time lapse takes place for in getting hold of any rolling stock in this country. Now, we're talking about 76 additional RTCs. Has anybody got a clear memorandum of undertaking from Transnet to say that they will provide us with those things? Because I can tell you now, if we don't get that undertaking, just forget it. Our experience with Transnet is that it is very, very poor in delivering those types of services, particularly unless you've got an agreement with them. It could take up to years to get those particular things into the country if they have to import them, or alternatively have to refurbish what they have in terms of their system. So I'll leave it there, Madam Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a couple of questions. The first one, just to have a sense of how much work has already been done. Anytime you have a task team, there are a lot of slippages unless this thing is well coordinated. When was this inception meeting held of the task team so that we can have a sense of how much work has been done? And linking with what my colleague here has asked, where does the buck stop? If I wanted to know anything about all of these things that the two officials have given us, who would I talk to? Which button would I press? Because in crisis communication that you refer to, in the case of a crisis, we need to know that there is one point where we can go and all of these answers can be provided.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to know about the supply of the jet fuel. We know, and we've heard the other day also, that we haven't got a large excess of fuel, whatever type it is in the country. And if the suppliers will actually be able to provide that the supply that is needed. Then I'm also worried if we look at the history a little bit, we know that usually World Cup time is also strike time in South Africa. And I want to know whether the unions have been pulled into this, not only to prevent strikes or something like that, but also we're talking about additional shifts, longer hours, and so on, how that is going to be handled. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. I think the most important thing is that we have talked about it, that we're trying to do something about it. And I agree wholeheartedly that extra capacity at OR must be the best solution, I think, in my mind. I'm concerned about the rail tanker standing there with fuel. Because then you're defeating the whole object, because you say that when you stand, it can't stand. And the object of rail tankers is at the bottom. And the thing, all the mess, the mucky stuff is at the bottom. So you'd have to put it into a tank itself. And space for the tankers. Is there enough place? Where are they going to park without interfering? And the other thing is that the refinery capacity. Can it supply this extra need? I think this is. And I was concerned about the new Durban airport. Has that been taken into account? And because that is extra capacity for. And finally, is that this does not neglect the other airports, because there a lot of people will be traveling from smaller airports into the centres. So you will need capacity at the smaller airport also.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on the storage capacity. The first presenter spoke of contamination of storage at the time. What I want to know is, the storage going to be enough, and is that storage going to be there just before 2010 or what? Also, how early is that going to be to have all this? And the other, the last thing is, seeing that we don't have fuel in South Africa, we import our fuel. Are we going to make sure that we've got quite enough so that we don't get disappointed before 2010? Thank you.
Okay, that was the first round. I think I'll hand over to the Department of
Thanks, Chair. I think before I answer the questions, we will share them between ourselves, myself and Ms. Ramuzi. I just want to make the point that there are national interest issues here at stake. And quite clearly, I think it's an issue of us as a country deciding whether we want a successful World Cup or not. Because there are interests, various interests. There's competition between the players, the oil companies themselves. There's the issue of control, because Transnet may view that you know, the logistics supply of fuel is their domain, and that it's not the domain of the department and so on. And then the issue that was raised about it's also an opportunity for people to raise other issues that period. But I think it all comes down to perhaps a national interest issue. As to whether we would want as a country to have that, but also I think the sharing of information for us as a department we believe is very useful. Airline bookings, you know, we need to get that information, you know, way up front for people to plan. There was a question about the buck stopping someone. At the end of the day, security of supply is the responsibility of the Minister of Minerals, I mean Minister of Energy. And however, it also means that there must be tools that then the department has to intervene in those entities that are not directly regulated by the department. Because this, in our view, is a logistics issue, and we would need to have some kind of mechanism between ourselves and the Transnet group of companies to actually make sure that we can intervene the department and say, you shall do this, you shall do that. And that, I think, is what is required. There is also a tendency of not thinking about over-investment in storage as a legacy that we leave for future generations. Because I think there has been a tendency to scale back on over-investment on storage, not thinking that as the economy grows, that storage will be utilized. And you would find that you wouldn't be having some of the challenges in other airports in our view, had we thought about the fact that those local economies will also grow, and then, you know, they will need to be serviced. But I thought I should start with those remarks, and then I will answer some of the questions, and my colleagues will then intervene on the others. On the issue of beyond the OR Tambo, I think it was indicated that we are concerned about those other efforts. The task team is also looking at those efforts. They have been engaged, and a decision has been taken that those efforts that are non-AXA efforts must also then be form part of the task team. And quite frankly, I think in that task team, we are going to have to, you know, as a department to call I think to be allowed by all the members to call the shots if the buck is going to stop with us. I think that is the approach that we have to adopt. Ms. Ramit, if you will answer some of the questions.
Okay, thank you. The question with regards to the recovery, and that it was known what the recovery period was then. As indicated in the presentation, it was the reasons which led to the low stock levels were twofold. The first issue was with regards to the supply from the inland refinery falling short. And then what happened subsequent to that was also the disruptions to the rail. So a combination of those issues actually then contributed to the stock levels falling short. And the reason why we're saying the recovery period was short is that once the operations had resumed to normal from the inland refinery and from rail, because they can only deliver or supply so much to our Tambo, it was difficult to then add over and above the capacity. So it was only once the product came through from the Durban to Joburg pipeline that the stock levels resumed to normal. And on average, the turnaround period for that, including the planning to ensure that the sufficient volumes going into the pipeline from the coastal refineries, getting the product through the pipeline to our Tambo, and the whole settlement period can take an average of about 2 to 3 weeks. So that was the average turnaround time from the beginning of July up until, the period in July up until the volumes resumed to normality in August. In terms of then the role of the task team and the work which has been done by the task team, the task team meets on a monthly basis. The first joint meeting was held in September, and there will be monthly meetings going forward, formal meetings. And it's also requested to report to the minister on a monthly basis, just in terms of progress reports. However, in between those meetings, there's also agreement that at operational level, just to ensure continuity and to ensure that work gets done, that the task team members also meet, that the formal meetings happen on a monthly basis. And reporting to structures such as the IMC is through the minister. There was also a question around the supply of jet fuels and whether the suppliers will be able to meet the fuel requirements. There is currently, the refining capacity is currently limited, and indications are that most demand, the additional demand during the World Cup will have to be met via imports. So although the refinery or manufacturing capacity is inadequate, the supply will have to be made by imports. And in this regard, it highlights also then the importance of the role that our port authority needs to play in ensuring that fuel cargo are scheduled. Because even if the product is important, if there's congestions at the point in which it needs to going to the pipeline or at the port or at the berth that could lead to other problems. There was also a question about the concern about the RTC's standing full, where we say that Transnet Freight Rail is considering putting some rail tank cars as additional storage during the World Cup. This is a recommendation which has been made, and as I indicated, we're still in the process of determining whether that is actually indeed the route we should go, and if that's the way we should go, what are the volumes that they need to be kept. So part of that exercise would involve understanding how this will impact on the ability for rail tankers to be offloaded. But indications today are that should not in any way negatively impact, because if the current fleet is expanded from 204 to 280, then the current rail tank car should be able to deliver, and then the additional one should only be used for contingency storage if that's the route to go. And then in terms of then what they're actually doing with regards to adding to the fleet, is that they're not importing additional rail tank cars. They're basically lining or refurbishing current rail tank cars to ensure that they meet the standards to be able to hold jet fuel. The capacity at airports, I think my colleague also highlighted that the capacity at airports is different depending on the different airports. In some airports, such as PE and Bloemfontein, it's actually the storage. But in Bloemfontein, there are plans to refurbish some of the demobile storage capacity. At Port Elizabeth, there's a storage issue, but because that's close to the coast, we are having engagements with the oil company which actually supplies that airport to understand what plans can actually be put in place and what plans are actually feasible to ensure that there will be a consistent supply to the airport during the period. And the issue of the contamination of the stock, I think when I raised that, it was mainly to highlight why there's always this, why the contributing factors to the long lead times of when product is coming through the coastal pipeline. So one of the key operational risks is that if you do not manage that process adequately, and the product which is jet fuel mixes with other products, you run the risk of contamination. So a very critical exercise of recertification to make sure that it meets the quality standards and that there is no mixture of products to take place. And that's basically essentially then the trade-off of ensuring quality versus trying to improve the turnaround period, and it could negatively impact you. And then how early will all these plans be put in place? The planning process, I think, is important to highlight that it requires various key role players. Now there are a lot of dependencies, and I think in terms of what you put in place, it gets refined further as and when more information becomes available. Because at the moment there are certain projections in terms of passenger movements which have been done by the Department of Transport, which have been used to inform some of the demand for liquid fuels. However, when the final draws take place, when the final schedules come into place, if they're going to change, as the information becomes improved, the plans also become more refined. So it's really an ongoing process, but not to say that we're not producing any plans at the moment. I mean, through some of the recommendations that we've made, is basically was informed by the information that we have at our disposal at the moment.
Yeah, I think I'll ask Axel then to take over the remaining questions.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, between myself and Andre, we hope to answer some of the outstanding questions. Before we do go into the questions, though, I would just like to remind the honorable members that the plans that we continuously show up here are plans that are based on a worst-case scenario. We meet with the local organizing committee on an ongoing basis to consistently refine those plans. As and when we know which additional teams have qualified, and I think there are about 9 that qualified again this weekend, we review whether there is a need to update those plans based on the probability that the fans will come. We also meet with the LOC to monitor what the ticket sales are. For an example, after England qualified, we are told, for an example, the FIFA website crashed 3 times, which is a strong indication that there's probably going to be a large contingent of English fans coming through. The next major milestone that we are working towards is the 4th of December, when we're going to have the draw here in Cape Town. That is when we will know in finality which teams, first of all, are going to be playing with whom and where those games are likely to take place. Because, for an example, if an England is playing a Brazil at Soccer City or here at Greenpoint Stadium in Cape Town, we wouldn't be as worried as if that game was taking place in Mpumalanga, where there's limited capacity. So we are working together with the LOC to consistently refine those plans. And so what we continuously show you here is what we believe is the worst case scenario, and we will continuously refine it. I am sure there will be an opportunity to share with both committees, Madam Chair, where our plans are, probably around the middle of December, once we've had the final draw. And then we're going to be working towards refining the plans for the final event in June next year. Andre, you want to take some of the questions?
I'm going to start with you with some of the questions. The first is, probably just to look at our Tamba as an airport. I think why our Tamba is so critical in terms of jet fuel is the actual supply logistics. If you look at all the other airports in the access table, specifically the airports at the coast, there is one method of supply into that airport, and the process for certification of fuel is relatively simple. So if you've got a known source with on-spec products, get transported to the airport, and there's probably a minimum settling time of between anything between 30 minutes and 4 hours, after which you can actually use that fuel. At our time, it's a bit different. Two of those tanks are isolated, and you get multi-product or fuel out of the multi-product pipeline, which there is a potential that you could have diesel or other fuels between the jet fuel. So the certification process for that fuel takes anything between 6 and 9 days. So you physically take a sample, you ship it down to the refinery, and they recertify that the fuel is clean and suitable for use. So, you know, if you look at the pure numbers and you look at the actual capacities and you look at 47 million litres and you just divide that by the average days, you're only sitting on 10 days. But, you know, we work on usable stock, and, you know, there's no definitive way to determine that. We've over time, you know, empirically tried to understand, you know, what is the absolute stock at the airport. So, the whole Tambo site is quite a difficult site to manage in terms of the different supplies. What also just needs to be understood is the physical termination of a lot of flights happen at our Tambo. All your long-haul flights, international carriers flying to our Tambo, they terminate there and they uplift a lot of fuel on their way back to Europe and other stations. So there's quite a large volume of fuel that leaves with those carriers. So in terms of the World Cup planning, our Tambo will always be a key airport in our stable. And to get fuel into Cape Town and Durban, I just believe it's much easier than at our Tambo. And you can react so much quicker in terms of executing the fuel. You know, if we have to react at our Tambo, we need 9 days to get fuel by the multi-product pipeline. I think that's the minimum time that we require. Just in terms of... And if there's a need, we can obviously show in terms of the tanks, specifically in terms of the pipe network, how the actual system is configured. Just on a comment on a physical tanking of fuel to the Mercy and specifically the road freighting of that fuel. Currently at Cape Town, we're probably consuming anything between 1.9 and 2.1 million litres per day. And all of that is also road freighted from the Calrath refinery into to the airport. It's probably anything between 29 and 35 truckloads per day. What we've seen is there's a certain minimum point where it becomes viable to install a pipeline. So in terms of the master planning, for example, for Cape Town, we will most probably start with the EIA for a dedicated pipeline into Cape Town within the next 9 to 11 months. So that project has been initiated. You know, it's part of our CapEx plan. We've discussed the detail with Transnet Pipeline. You know, so it's part of our master planning exercise. At this stage, a pipeline would not be viable for the merge. We simply do not have enough volumes. I think, you know, on a very busy day, we pump about 208,000 litres to that site. Now, the size of pipeline that you would require just doesn't make it viable. Also, we need and we require certain minimum flow rate to ensure that the quality of the fuel stays on spec. If you don't have the required flow rate, then you get accumulation of bacteria on the sidewalls of the pipeline. So, you know, that's also a very difficult thing that you need to address and that you have to deal with. So we will most probably look at, you know, delaying that pipeline until a point in time where we can find an optimum solution for actually providing it. Then just in terms of the leak that we had at our terminal, it was a very, very unfortunate incident. Probably a design flaw in terms of the physical installation and the way that it was installed, where a gasket between two flanges came out and we lost fuel into a stormwater system. So, you know, it wasn't a question of maintenance, so I can just assure you that in terms of the pipelines at our standby, all the pipelines are brand new, and I'm talking less than 8 years. You know, the installation previously, the pipelines were probably 35 years old. We've gone through an elaborate process of refurbishing all the lines, you know, all the refueling pits. All of that equipment is now brand new. We're also protecting our pipelines with historic protection, and we're busy commissioning as we speak with what we call a leak detection system. So what we'll do at 12 o'clock at night when the airport goes quiet, we'll pump the system up to probably 2 times its working pressure, and then we've got certain flow meters and pressure sensors on the line where we can then determine even finally. To find leaks in operational system, especially we pump between 4 and 5 million litres a day, I would say it's almost impossible because you have to then quantify what you take off and what you put into the system. So that leak detection system will give us a lot of certainty that our pipelines are intact. And there's also a lot of other tests that we do on a continuous basis to make sure that the pipelines are fit for use. So from our side, you know, anything is possible, but we definitely do not anticipate any issues on our fuel lines. But as I say, they're all now new in the system. Just also in terms of the work done, Bougonia touched on it, I think a lot of work has been done to determine the fuel quantities. I think the fuel quantities are driven by passenger numbers. And like Bougonia also said, we've made a few assumptions and we've based it on worst-case scenario. Even in the Port Elizabeth example, you would have seen that we calculated the anticipated volumes based on a 75-litre per passenger fuel volume. Now, that number is probably a bit higher at this stage, and, you know, closer to the time when we start talking to the airlines in terms of what type of aircraft they will fly, what route they will fly, we will be able to adjust that number to something probably closer to 25, 30 litres per passenger. But, you know, at this stage, we said, let's work on worst-case scenarios, plan for that, and as information becomes available, we will downscale the numbers. Because it will focus us to really sort out, you know, the problem. Just in terms of additional storage capacity, you know, ultimately we will probably sit with about 56 millimeters storage capacity at our standard. I think that there will be more than sufficient for the World Cup. I don't think we will be able to form more tanks. I can tell you that the 12 million tanks that we're finishing probably by the second week of March, it's probably going to take us a month or a month and a half to fill, just to get those slugs scheduled into the multiple of the pipeline and to actually get the fuel into the airport, due to, again, the complexity of the logistics. So, you know, to focus on more additional storage, we looked at that initially when we did our plans, and that's why you saw that third tank on the slide. But it,
it's just not viable to actually fill those tanks with the supply logistics. Just in terms of the working hours, I think there was a question on working hours for staff. I can also touch on it. As an industry, we've already spoken to the Department of Labor. We're obviously going to apply for ministerial determination. We will see in terms of what we're obviously going to give our workers a choice to work first in terms of overtime. There's obviously limitations to how you can stretch that. And then afterwards, we will obviously look at contractor staff. I think we are very fortunate that between AXA and many of the stakeholders, you know, with a fairly quick process, we can actually train staff to do certain activities. So our highly qualified staff will be left to supervise, and we will contract in additional staff to help us with many of the services. So I think a lot of work, again, has been done. We even going down to the nuts and bolts of it now to actually schedule people. So we're actually putting names into schedule so that people now know where they need to work for the duration of that workup, and then we also know where the blanks are that we need to fill in. You know, obviously the airports will be busy, and we will be working with, you know, for extended periods of time. And the airports will be under pressure. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because they will be working at capacity. Just in terms of perhaps on Cape Town and Durban, I think that, like I said, the supply logistics there is much easier to handle. There's also, I think, possibilities for additional storage capacity in those centres. So it's just probably something that we as an industry need to manage close to the time.
All questions answered. Except for the negotiations with the union, I'm sure, in terms of the period where the World Cup event is during the June, July, the negotiation time. I didn't hear a share response, but I think this is an issue for everybody, AFSCA or the department or whoever is involved with the members that are part of this. So is that also part of the engagement or what?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can confirm that it is part of the contingency planning. We have encouraged all of our stakeholders to sign multi-year agreements, just because, by way of an example, at OR Tambo, we probably have about anywhere between 18,000 to 20,000 people working there, and less than 1,000 of those work for airports companies. They work for other stakeholders. So, wherein we have highly unionized environment, we have, for instance, been in touch with SAA, and I think that they have completed, or they're on the verge of completing, a multi-year agreement with their unions, and we're encouraging all of our stakeholders to do the same, to try and minimize the eventuality of strikes. And not only are we doing that, but we are requiring for our stakeholders to also have contingency plans. It's not just sufficient to have multi-year agreements in place, but in the event that there is industrial action, we're trying to encourage everybody to have contingency plans. So everybody from the retailers, Mug and Bean, to Steers, to Juicy Lucy, to the ground handlers, to the fueling companies, we're expecting all of them to have contingency plans in the event that we do face industrial action.
Okay. We can have the second round, I'm sure.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was going to ask the question around the benchmark. But it does appear that there is constant communication between AXA on the one hand and LOC on the other hand, and I assume that LOC has made lots of studies of previous hosts of the World Cup and can be able to give advice in that respect. But obviously, the issue of benchmark is very important in the sense that it is out of that that you can now be able to positively address other areas such as capacity, space, maintenance, safety, reserves, and all of those, because now you know what you are benchmarking all of those areas on. But I would like to move to the issue of job creation, come engagement of COSATU, come the estimate of plus minus how many jobs may be created. Not only by AXA, but by all the different stakeholders. you see a sudden boom here. And how you see that job creation beyond the welcome, you know, the impact of it, the negative impact of it, if I may say. Most of our discussions, we spoke about transport insofar as we refer to the air transport. Very little do we look at the issue of fuel in relation to the fact that from the homes or the residences where the supporters will be coming from to the airport and from the airport to where the events will be taking place will be requiring alternative transport, and as to whether there are some links with bus companies, taxi organizations, trains, and all that. You know, because I think you would, of course, also need a lot of diesel and petrol for those people. The impact of the situation of hosting World Cup created an abnormal environment in a country that hosts. I wonder whether there are certain legislative proposals that you have, and if so, we are talking here today on the 13th of the 10th month, 2009, a few months to the World Cup, indeed. When and how fast would you like those to be processed? Because if we have not started now in October and the World Cup is in June, next year we're talking something in the region of 8 months, a very short period indeed. Lastly, the issue of stakeholders. Stakeholders here would include your effective relationship with the neighboring countries, fuel distributors, and not only fuel distributors, including service by those countries in respect to those particular jets that would be flying from them. Whether the same problem that we are addressing about jet fuel here is getting addressed by our target community around here. That's one stakeholder, but the other stakeholder is the supporters. You are beginning to get indications from England, and you'll get that from Brazil, and you'll get that from other countries. Whether there is a plan to engage in the behavior of these supporters as they come into the country, and as well as the method and mode of transport for them and the anticipated fuel. This question is not necessarily a question to answer. I think it's a question that goes to everyone or the department. It's a question that goes to everyone involved. And this goes also for issues of the COSAT.
Yes.
No, that's the last one. This is the last one. Let me just finish it. Issues like the COSATU staff and other stakeholders, whether you engage with them, because in dealing with transport and management of the people that are getting transported, that is a very key and important matter. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you.
I've got only one question. It seems as if when you talk about transportation, you only talk about pipeline and rail. I just wanted to find out whether you have ever looked at the alternatives in terms of using road trucks to transport fuel. And this might have been influenced by your whether the particular usage of a particular mode of transport is being influenced by your limited storage capacity, or it is just that traditionally these are the two types of mode of transport which has been utilized to transport the fuel. So that's basically what I wanted to know.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a clarification question on the issue of the tungsten. What I wanted to find out is that the tungsten that we are talking about has finalized its investigation. Because if it has finalized its investigation, I think we need to know the report, because it's supposed to have the findings and the recommendations. So I'm not sure whether the recommendations that appear in this presentation and the recommendations from the tungsten. If the investigation has not yet been finalized, when is it supposed to be finalized?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Anwar Gheri. I'm the Chief Director of the Civil Aviation Department of Transport. I just want to make 4 points, and obviously what I'm going to achieve is to lay the honorable members' mind at ease that obviously we're planning for a worst-case scenario. There are industry-specific solutions which we haven't painted on in terms of presentation from an asset perspective, which are creative solutions we'll probably approach after the draw is done on the 4th of December. The first thing is aircraft capacity in terms of uplift of fuel can also be manipulated in terms of flight. So by definition, if there is a problem for an international flight being out of the country, and let's say the problem is that, oh, here, from a fuel supply point of view, the aircraft does not have to take up all the fuel for its long-haul flight. It may take up a specific quantity of fuel, stop over at another country, pick up the remainder, and fly out. So we can have an interim measure should we have a crisis as such. Okay. The second issue is in terms of the demand of fuel and the balancing of demand of fuel. Yes, we all know the numbers are ranging between 400,000 passengers to 500,000 passengers coming in, additional for 2010. Now, that's going to create an increase in demand on the domestic leg. Once again, we may have an industry-specific solution. If we have an inland problem for fuel, then we can ask the Department of Energy, I'm sure we can come to an arrangement for fuel to be uplifted at coastal regions. And we've been informed earlier on that it wouldn't be a problem at the coast because the supply of fuel is much more easier to achieve. The other issue I want to raise is, and I think the honorable members made mention about the modes of transport and transportation of fuel. Just to give you an understanding in terms of quantity, a large 747 aircraft at full capacity will probably uplift over 240,000 liters of fuel in one go. So it's going to be a number of road vehicles that you want to transport fuel up and down the country to fill up one large aircraft. I think that is the reason why you've got the rail transportation and the pipeline transportation. The flow as such. One other area that we haven't really touched on and something that the Department of Energy I'm sure is looking at is that during the 2010 event, one mustn't just focus purely on the large commercial carriers. We have a very large general aviation industry in this country. The small aircraft that carry the 4-seater, 6-seater aircraft. These aircraft are normally prone to utilize what you call airgas, okay, a different type of fuel for those. It's a propeller-driven type of aircraft. There's going to be an increase in demand for that fuel. I think with in terms of the industry-wide discussions going on with the BASAs and the ASAs of the world, with the large carrier operator association, and there will be ongoing discussion with the smaller operators in terms of the civil aviation associations that deal with general aviation. And the reason why I'm raising the point for honorable members is that you would find that a number of tourists coming in will prefer to utilize smaller aircraft to fly in from small airports because that's going to be the game. It's also going to be the game park, the sector that people will be visiting that we need to focus on. And the last point I'm going to raise is in terms of the airlines utilizing the type of aircraft, it will make a very big determination in terms of what quantity of fuel we need to have available for those aircraft. If, for example, an airline decides to use an A380 aircraft to take 500 passengers, you could quite easily find that another airline might utilize three aircraft of a smaller configuration to take that number of passengers, and that will have an impact on the fuel upload. So the figure that you've seen here is a moving target. I think we, as an honorable member, need to appreciate that. That the only time we will get a very clear indication is once the draw is done and once airlines start applying for slots and categorizing the type of aircraft that we're flying to the country, that we can equate a proper spreadsheet of what our quantities can be expected and required from the airport itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr.
My question is also related to, I would like to have a very clear understanding in as far as the storage at the coast guard, particularly there. To have a clear understanding as to whether the storage is at where the airport is right now, if there's an international airport, or the storage will also move to Lamesi, where the airport, new airport is I am linking that question to the question that was asked by Honorable Faro on the issue of transporting. If the storage will remain at the current Devon airport and the logistics now, and as far as moving the fuel from that airport to the new airport, the Lamesi one. The second issue that I would want to raise is on page 6 of the presentation by the Department of Energy under the scope. I don't see the practice in venue seeking being mentioned as critical areas. And I know for the fact that one of the criteria for the city to qualify as captain venue was that they have a regional airport that is big enough also to accommodate bigger flights. And that is because I was a deputy mayor of the different municipality, which is one of the principal venues. I know for the fact that the storage facility that there is not enough to fill up a bigger flight. And I don't see the practice in venue, particularly for television featuring, as the scope for that practice that has been put in place. Does that mean that there are no problems around the practice in venue in relation to the fuel shortage and the movement of the flight from those areas to where the deal will be based and back to the practice in venue, because the team will not drive from Margate if there was a base camp in Margate to then board a flight because they are only allowed to have a 20-kilometer distance from the hotel to the airport, and then they fly up from the airport to wherever they are playing.
Those are the last questions, I think, and we can hear them. Mine is only on the existing crisis management plan. Is there no better name that you can have for that particular? It's like you want to stay in the crisis forever. I mean, you like this crisis, and then you have the crisis management. Why don't you have the committee? I like the Bongani West scenario case.
is what we would expect. Is there no other better name? Because I understand it's an existing plan. Don't you have a better name to name it?
The neighboring countries, I think we are engaging our neighboring countries because we believe that they have a role to play, and that process is unfolding. The one, in our view, one country that has got significant infrastructure is actually Zimbabwe, and that infrastructure is currently, because of the situation, underutilized, and we are engaging with our colleagues there to see, you know, what extent they can avail that infrastructure. They are actually completing a refurbishment of their jet fuel handling facilities. And I think it's because they are anticipating traffic increases. But of course, that is engagement that is ongoing. We plan to do the same with the other countries, Namibia and Botswana in particular, and as well as Mozambique. On legislative proposals, I think at this stage, what we think is important is that the organs of state must just cooperate on this matter, and I don't believe at this stage that requires any change in legislation. They are all owned by members of the public. They must just do what is expected of them, and that process must just be a directive for them to do that. On the issue of the fans, there are structures in the LOC that deals with the issues of security and so on. And in fact, you members would have picked up in the newspapers that there are some indications of some threats and so on, just to also indicate that the Minister of Energy did, when in Vienna, sign a security agreement on protection of nuclear installations, and that process will be facilitated by the International Atomic Energy Agency. I think the question of the mode of transport was touched upon by our colleague from the Department of Transport. But as a department, the Energy Department, we favor only two modes of transport, mainly. Those are our, you know, and that's pipeline, as followed by rail, and then, you know, as a last resort, then we believe that road transport can then be used because it's cheaper. It's actually much cheaper to transport fuel via pipeline and rail. And then on the issue of the job creation, I guess I'll leave to my colleagues from AXA to deal with that one. I'll ask Ms. Amit to deal with the issue of the crisis.
Okay.
us, I will deal with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for that input. Yes, the name could be better changed to something else. But essentially, I think we maintain the name here because it's the plan that's currently existing, but we acknowledge that it could be named to be more optimistic looking to get us out of crisis mode. But essentially, the focus will be on expanding on what actually exists rather than trying to reinvent the wheel. So identifying the gaps and trying to expand there upon. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll try and tackle the issue on job creation. Whilst I'm not aware of the outcome of any studies that have been done by South African tourism on the impact of the World Cup on job creation, both permanent and temporary jobs, I do know that they were looking at the study to understand what that impact is going to be. From our sector, from the aviation sector, we see probably because there's going to be that spike during the World Cup, there's going to be some temporary employment that is created, but when that demand goes back down to where it was before, we see very little need for the airlines, ourselves, our stakeholders to retain additional staff that they do not need. Suffice it to say, the current statistic that we are aware of is that for every six new tourists that come into the country, one permanent job is created in the country. I don't know what that will translate to for the World Cup. With regards to the land transport issues, we have previously identified that as a major concern. Getting people from our airports into buses, into taxis, into public transport to the stadium. There's a lot of coordination that needs to happen with the host cities. Fortunately, that process has started. In some instances, it is far more advanced than others, but it is a process that we agreed with the LOC in our most recent meeting that needs to be fast-tracked now, how that coordination is going to happen, because the public transport also includes the tour operators for the large tour groups that also need to be proper coordinated. There are also forums wherein we engage with, you asked the issue around COSATU and the SAPS and other stakeholders. Yes, I can confirm that there are other forums wherein we engage on safety issues, we engage on security issues, we engage on issues of coordination, proper coordination. And that's just not forums that are led by us as AXA, but they're forums that are led by a whole host of other entities. So I can confirm that is happening. On the issue that the chairperson raised of the practicing venues, I had mentioned earlier on that we are in engagement with the LOC. Our understanding is that there were up to, and I stand corrected, there were up to 60 of these venues that were available for the participating nations to select from. Now, as we all know, there are going to be 32 participating nations. So, in our engagement with the LOC, that will only become known after the final draw in December, which of these venues are going to be practicing venues. And once we know that practicing venue is not the term that you use, what term do you use?
Base camp.
That's the word I was looking for. The base camps will only be known after the 4th of December, wherein we will then have an indication of what the specific problems are with moving fans in and around those base camps. But until such time that has been finalized, we won't know what the potential problems are. We just want to touch on the chairperson also raised the issue of the fuel, specifically at Durban. And I'll ask my colleague for Andre to respond specifically. But suffice it to say, chairperson, the storage facilities at Durban will close. There are new storage facilities being constructed at the new airport at La Mercy. I think Honorable Member Farrell spoke about the concern around transporting fuel from Island View to replenish the stock that is depleted each day at the Lamercy Airport. But Andre, do you want to touch on that?
Chairperson, in terms of the current site, I think for the last 3-4 years we've made a decision that we will not construct any further facilities at the existing Durban site. So the actual fuel capacity for storage that actually belongs to AXA is very limited. Whereas at the new site at the Mercy, we've got 6 million litres, which will probably provide us for about 17 days under normal operating conditions. So again, we've got 4 tanks of 1.5 million litres, with obviously new state-of-the-art receipt facilities where you can quickly decant the refueling or the tankers. So the process to actually decant the tankers and to actually get that fuel into the tank will be a very smooth, quick process. So the intention is, number one, is to close down the Durban site completely and then to operate from the new airport at the Mercy for the period of just prior to the World Cup from the 1st of May.
Chairperson, there was a question on the report of the task team. I think what has happened here is that the task team has already moved on to the preparation mode for the World Cup. They've moved beyond the causes of the shortages that we had. I think the root cause in terms of that is fairly established as to what happened there. And that, rail operated below optimal, required levels. And then prior to that, there had been some challenges in terms of the pipeline. So that is what really has happened, that the task team then shifted then to say, what do we do in terms of the preparation for the World Cup and making sure that this doesn't happen again. If there is a specific report that is required in terms of that, that can be produced, but I think it will come to the it will point to the conclusion that rail did not, there were some challenges there as well as at NATRA. The other fuel needs, home to the stadium and so on, I believe that that also the minister expanded the role of the task team to look at not only jet fuel, but all other fuels. And we believe actually that it may well be that the jet fuel issue is not really the biggest of our challenges. But of course, this is currently a work in progress.
Okay, those were the answers given. I think now we have to move on away from the report from the chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would want to take this opportunity to thank all the presenters as well as the members of the joint portfolio committee meeting of transport and energy. I think there are two issues that have come up in this meeting, as we had identified in the beginning. There are issues that are related to the current situation that we are in as far as the supply of fuel energy, jet energy is concerned, and all the issues that are related. What I think has come out strongly in relation to that is the lack of coordination and cooperation between the departments and also government entities, particularly Transnet, as a critical player green fuel transportation. This coordination relates very much to the Department of Energy. How Transnet relates to the Department of Energy. And I think that is a critical issue that would need a follow-up by both of these portfolio committees. And I think also in coordination with the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise. That would then facilitate an intervention that is required to ensure that that cooperation is actually developed and there is a smooth working relationship between Transnet, Energy and Transport. The second issue that has come up in this meeting is that as a long-term intervention, there seems to be a need for a clear, strong role of the government in the fuel industry. That would also require a follow-up by Parliament, initiated again by this joint meeting, where I think there would be a follow-up again where the two portfolio committees would meet and map out the way forward. How are we going to look at the role of the government in the fuel industry and ensure that there is strong participation of government so that in future we are not just focusing on the indicators of underlying problems, but we begin to tackle the underlying problem. The third issue is the issue of the task team that has been established that is currently dealing with the immediate issue. Question that we have is, how does the work of that task team get known to Parliament? Because it is a core structure that has got a number of players, and there is no portfolio committee that it accounts to. And I think that because it was established by the Minister of Energy, the Portfolio Committee on Energy will have to take a lead on this to ensure that there is a kind of reporting to Parliament on the progress that is being made, as well as the big impact and the achievements of the work that will be done there. I thought that those were the three points that I wanted to make, and I would again want to thank you all for availing yourself. Your presentations and your input have actually enabled us to have a better understanding of what the situation is like, and also it challenges us to think on how we can make the situation much better so that we realize a better life for all in South Africa, and the kind of services that was promised to our people. Thank you very much.
Thanks, with a summary, but with the addition that as far as I understand, the Department of Energy is like the lead department. But you've got all sorts of departments that are involved in terms of the slide representation. DCI, in the transport department, some are falling under public enterprise because they are state-owned enterprises. So it means it's a combination of all those that then form part of the IMC, which they are then answerable to the deputy president, because it's leading the question of the 2010 World Cup preparation. So in that, it is true that some of the reports don't come to us, but it's issues that are then tackled at the executive level. But those things do have an impact in terms of our oversight role, and we have to exercise that. So there should be some feeling as to how we can deal with those issues. But I think overall, it is all these issues that then we have to deal with. And I'm sure this is not the last meeting. We have to deal with those that then have to be dealt by us. But surely the implementation of some of the key policy issues seems to be problematic in the one they coordinating them. But also, then, not that there's too much. The Confederation Cup was quite a success with all the challenges, and the WSSC was done, all other cricket rugby exception. So we seem to have a little bit of experience as a developing country. We are better off, but we need them to deal with a lot of issues that we have to deal with before the 2010 World Cup. It seems that there are some of those issues that need them to be dealt with well before, so they will be able to do the follow-up. Otherwise, I think this was a successful joint meeting, and we enjoyed being part of it. I think the Committee on Energy can now, we can declare the meeting closed, I'm sure. And thank the department, COE, DOC, and the APSA for availing themselves for this very good presentation and discussion, and getting some quite frank answers for many of the issues. I think this is a good step. We need them to step back and then to the request to have three members of the Energy Committee be part of the committee to deal with agenda items. Some members of the Management Committee, now and I think those can go, and then the rest can remain on top. So they assist the committee then.
Thank you very much. I want to give this gentleman's name here, this honourable member, and the honourable member down there. Of course, I was looking for your face, and that was my mistake. Where's that lady's name down there? Chairperson could be there, right? He's got stuff on that issue. I spoke to Gareth when I arrived here. That is something because Bata no gap about and someone I think I'm gonna question. The question you
okay.
That's what I remember. That is that was them. And I think he's serious about that project. He's a clean Montoya. Oh, On the slab, yes, yes. He knows that.
Can we then start with the meeting of the postal commission? Thank you very much. The reason we have asked to have this part of the meeting is to deal with item number 7, the consideration and adoption of the portfolio committee on transport step 10 program and strategic plan. Members were sent both of these documents, those that serve on transport, on the email. And I'm sure each and every one of us has a chance of going through them. The program in relation to the strategic plan. The plan that takes us from where we are to 2014. It relates to key areas of our priorities, which are covered from page 1 to page 4. Then from page 5, it begins to identify areas that we shall be focusing on during the first term of 2010 leading to the second term of 2014, which will then be the end of our term. This is not a rigid plan in terms of what he shall be doing in each meeting and in each month. It is a plan that is to guide us on and direct us on the things that we shall be focusing on from now over the period of 5 years. In between, we will then develop specific plans that relate to the day-to-day meetings that we shall be having as one as the study calls at national and international level. So that is what we are required to do today, to adopt this overall plan, so that then we can have it submitted for approval by the House Chairperson. Thank you. Honourable Barr.
Madam Chair, I would consider that the report is nearly there. There's just a couple of things that I've done. And it's a very big one as far as I'm concerned, because it relates to the safety aspects of road travel. And does seem to have picked it up in the key bar. I think we discussed it, but it just seems to have been admitted. We've got these 10,000 deaths we report annually, and we cannot ignore them. We've got to, as a committee, address that issue right there before even people start traveling to this country next year. Are we going to look at trying to prevent this? There's a whole lot of initiatives we can try there. I know Iwata is one of them in terms of the point system, but I think we need to highlight that as one of our key issues. I don't know if you agree. And maybe just including of that summary will make me feel a lot happier that we've covered it. Must have been a bit vicious, I'm sure.
Is there any other contribution of something maybe that we have overlooked that would need to be included in our text?
I don't think it's emphasized, but it could be embraced in the priority. The need for the public transport to operate efficiently, including taxis, buses, everything, prior to the World Cup, will need some initiatives from us to ensure that the operating licensing board that is now depicted in the National Land Transport Act, down to municipal level, provincial level, national level, so that buses can travel across the country, needs to be addressed. If you recall, when Prosser was here, I spoke to them about autopaths and their role, and they said, no, they've still got existing operating license boards, but there's going to be a lot more buses that are going to be needed that don't have those operating license boards. And we maybe need to go and discuss with some of the provinces the initiatives that they're doing there to see whether they've got those operating licenses. But they're not working. They take 18 months before you can even get through the process. Now, we haven't got 18 months left, and all the buses arriving in the country and all the taxis that are going to be legally operating between airports and venues and hotels need to have operating licenses. And that's why the National Land Transition Office, that act was changed, to accommodate those people, and we still haven't had anything. And I think it might be included in the BRT, but then we must say that in the public transport processes we're going to include the key areas, the OLBs as they were we previously called it, could be under the state of readiness of all transport modes, it could be there, but I think we must emphasize that critical area. Thank you,
Madam Chair. That's Honourable Farrow in the referring to is covered on page 5. One of the first meetings that the Shanti is in the February. In February, there will be a committee week. And one of the first issues that we shall be dealing with is the update on the operating guide of the board and the conversion of the family. I don't know whether maybe it's the
different. Yeah, I knew we had mentioned it somewhere, Chair. Sorry to worry, but I think it should be a key priority.
All those three items that are put there, the first meeting that we are having when you come back, from page 5.
Yes. But I'm wondering whether it should be captured in the key priority, in the overview, on page 2. Sorry, my light's not on. Can I just repeat what I was saying is that I appreciate it's in the program, and we have picked it up there. But then I'm suggesting that possibly it should be embraced in the key priority as one of the initiatives that we have to take is this on page 2. Unless it's covered in some of the other areas that we've got there, Chair.
I think bullet number 5 talks to that. Because bullet number 5 says, ensure there is an integrated transport plan and coordination model with all tiers of government. Cover this. Honorable Lucas.
Madam Chair, and it's not really, it's just a little concern that was, there was this article in the paper which spoke about the airfare in 2010, which will be going up drastically for 1 month, and then after that month they will come down again, which seems to be a ridiculous state of affairs. Who are we fooling, and who are we taking for a ride? I mean, even the visitors, it is unfair to put such an impediment on them. What about us that want to travel internally? Are we going to suffer?
So I wanted to intervene on the report that you've already provided, that on what the Honourable Farouk is going, bullet number 5 and also bullet number 7, I think it will cover the areas from the national operational places, when talking about the state of readiness of all transport law.
I think the issue raised by Honorable Lucas is also an important issue, which I think it could be incorporated when we are dealing with issues relating to our state of readiness. In the very same first look of meeting, if we can include that.
Thank
you. Other than that, I don't see anyone is raising that as something that was not supposed to be here that is here. What we have done is to include some of the things that we thought we've left out. When you're marking?
So what I'm going to raise is not part of that if it has impact on what you're talking about. Because according to my understanding, the World Cup is going to be around July. So we don't know how our activities, our committees are going to be affected, as we're not also aware of the parliamentary program during those months. Because when looking at our program, it also includes the program, the activities that we're supposed to do around June, and especially June. So we don't know whether going to be able to implement these activities successfully or not. Because I think that as members are supposed to know how the program going to be. If we're going to be here, we shall apply flight directions, book area and so on. Otherwise we'll experience no problem.
Yeah. I think that in terms of knowing where we shall be when, that is beyond our control. It is a program. We will have to fit the program of the portfolio committee to the program of parliament and then try and adjust around that. I was just looking at June on page 5, final report of implementation of all 2010 related projects. I thought maybe if we could bring that forward, because if that final report on our state of readiness would then be presented in June when 2010 starts, we would be linked to actually identify any gaps that would need immediate intervention. If that could be brought forward maybe to May instead of it being done in June. If there are no other comments, I would then propose that we have a proposal for the approval of the strategic plan as well as a seconder for that. Gwenya Mabila is proposing and the Faro is seconding. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Lucas?
I am on a trip and I'm ready to have an extra trip when I'm away. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.